Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better with new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect. The fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Welcome back in. Final hour. Robbie and Rex Road here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road. Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Talking Titans. We'll get into Vanderbilt's big win against Hawaii coming up a little bit later in the show as well. But right now, taking your thoughts, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. So, Joe, a decent night for Treylon Burks. 3 catches, 33 yards, and a touchdown in that game against Arizona on Saturday. Good to see him on the field and available to play. There were some questions about that heading into the game on Saturday. So given the complete picture, now that the preseason is done, hopefully he's healthy moving forward here, what do you anticipate the role being for Treylon Burks? How do the Titans use him to begin play in the season based on what you've seen from him on the field thus far?
Well, I think he will be, you know, part of the offense, part of the game plans. I think he'll be specific parts of the game plans. You know, I think they're going to scheme ways to get him the ball, some specific things. Whereas I think you're going to see a lot more snaps early for, well, you're going to see Robert Woods, if things go well all year, probably get the most snaps at wide receiver. Nick Westbrook-Ikhine, I think all year is going to be a key factor in the offense, but I think early especially, he's going to get, I think, quite a few more snaps than Treylon Burks. I mean, I think those two guys, Woods and NWI, are going to get the bulk of the snaps. I think Burks will be out there situationally, and they're going to try to get him the ball in space, get some run after the catch, maybe get a deep shot, you know, things like that. Kyle Phillips is going to be out there in situations as a chain mover, and I think he'll – And I don't know if Kyle, like, people ask me about like fantasy football, Kyle Phillips, Treylon Burks. I'd probably still go with Burks because you hope that by the end of the year, I mean, first of all, either one of them very late.
Yeah.
In your drafts. Okay. But,
or if you're drafting against us, take them as early as you want.
Well, that's true. But if you're comparing those two guys, I think Kyle Phillips is going to be maybe a little bit more, I guess, reliable commodity at the beginning. But even Kyle Phillips, if he gets like, he'll have like a 4 catch for 29 yard day, and maybe 2 or 3 of them are for first down. So that's a valuable asset. But Treylon Burks certainly has more potential from a fantasy perspective. And obviously, what you hope if you're the Titans or a Titans fan is that it's like A.J. Brown. I just keep citing the A.J. Brown stats, 40% ish or so of the snaps in his first 4 games, then got into the 60s. And from then on, he took off and he was essential. And I think if it takes a month for Treylon Burks, and he can stay healthy and be in great shape and get better and better, and that's a good timeline. It's not, to me, it's not like some huge red flag or concern. I understand that he was a first-round pick, but you also have to be realistic about rookie receivers in the NFL. It used to be rookie receivers in the NFL needed a year. Like, really. Like, very few of them came right in, and that's changed. But it's still, like, more normal than not for a rookie to need some time.
It is. Look, I still think he's shown enough where you need to try to get him the ball. I think Titans will do that. Like, I think it'll be, you know, I think they'll try to get it to him, you know, quickly and see what he can do after the catch. I also think, look, when you start to break down, like, the deep threat guys on this team, like, I still think Treylon Burks is near the top of the list when it comes to deep threat guys down the field. So if the Titans are going to translate what they did in camp to the regular season, and they do go vertical more often, I still think you're going to want Treylon Burks on the field for that at times. So, I don't know what his snap count is going to look like. I think for sure Robert Woods and Nick Westbrook-Ikhine early on will get more snaps than he does. But I still think you're going to see a significant amount of Treylon Burks in week one against the Giants just based on the skill set that he brings to the table. I think you have to.
No, I agree. Look, he offers some things that nobody else in the receiver room does. And really, the closest to him, the most similar receiver to him is Racy McMath. In those two guys, you have tremendous size and speed. And I think in both cases, you're going to see some attempts to, you know, to get them vertical, especially again, based on, I can't look at how this offense operated in camp and ignore that they seem to be really focusing on trying to go downfield more. And so I think you're going to see that from both of them. But Treylon Burks, but what you hope is that by the end of, by mid-season or so and into the second half of the season, you can see that he's the most talented of the receivers on this roster. It's just early on, if you're going to see that, I think it's going to be in well-devised and well-chosen little spots, little pockets where they can get him going. Because there's a ton that goes into being a receiver in the NFL. There's a lot that goes into it.
Let's go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Adam from Portland. Adam, what's up, man?
Hey, Robbie. So, man, what I took away from is that it is preseason. Only the Baltimore Ravens actually game plan for these games, which I guarantee they do. Like, they had, just like they ran Lamar on that one play that pissed everybody off, that you're supposed to be taking knees on because they want to keep their streak alive. They are a team that does that. Completely lack of character, and it just embodies everything that the Ravens are. But that's not why I called you. So I think Treylon Burks, I just seeing practice and hearing you guys talk about him, they're not going to show. If he's making plays in practice, like there's something specific package that he's hitting on really good, why would you show that in the preseason? There's absolutely no reason to do that. So yeah, I think the Giants are going to have a really tough day. I don't know exactly what our game plan is going to look like, but I don't think, just because they had kind of quiet numbers in the preseason, that's such a stupid thing to get worked up. Like, he's not showing me enough. You know, you hear Jared do this all the time. What would they show? Why would they show something on a game that doesn't count? That's crazy.
Hey, thanks for the call, Adam. Appreciate it. I mean, a couple things there. Number one, Joe, I did bet money on the Ravens to win the preseason game the other day because apparently it does matter to them, and they did win. So that was a good investment by me. So congrats to Baltimore. Number two.
Nice.
I keep with Treylon Burks, everything we just talked about, the role, I think will be a limited one in the Giants game. But there's also part of this that I keep coming back to. How big of a difference does the on-the-field production look like with Treylon Burks when Ryan Tannehill is the quarterback as opposed to Malik Willis and Logan Woodside? Like, I have to think it makes some difference with number 17 out there.
Yeah, of course. Treylon Burks was we've talked about it, was open a few times, but the ball just never got to him. So that's true. And I hear what Adam's saying. I mean, I think, you know, I mean, look, I think you're running some of your offensive plays in these games, right? Even though it's not a game playing game, like you're still running Tennessee Titans playbook plays,
sure,
right? Like, and running routes that you will run. But yeah, like I don't remember. I could be wrong. I don't remember an attempt to get him the ball on a screen. Did they do that? I don't think they did.
I don't think so.
I could be wrong. Well, they gave him one jet sweep, right? They gave him a jet in the first game. But that's the type of thing that I think you will see more. It just, again, it's like with A.J. Brown, immediately it was like, just get the ball in his hands and he's going to do special things with it. And then eventually everything came together. I mean, it didn't take long, but early on in the season, they didn't have confidence that he could go out there and play the entire game, play 70% of the snaps. And it's not like they were loaded at receiver either, by the way. So I think that's going to be the same kind of thing. But I think that's a good point by Adam. Like, they will have some stuff for him that certainly we haven't seen yet in these preseason games.
By the way, Racy McMath on Saturday, one catch for 27 yards. I mean, he's, to me, pretty clearly on the team at this point. Cody Hollister, two catches for 20 yards. Des Fitzpatrick, two catches for 23 yards on five targets. Mason Kinsey, three catches for 18 yards as well. The bottom part of this room, by the bottom part, I mean one spot, basically, that they may or may not want to keep. If they're keeping six guys, I do wonder who the leader in the clubhouse is for that right now. I mean, Des, I thought he had a chance to separate himself on Saturday. He really didn't do it on Saturday, in my opinion, so I don't know. Like, if they're keeping six, if I had to pick one, I guess it's probably still Dez, but I'm interested to see what that looks like this week.
Yeah, I would predict Dez as the sixth guy. But I don't feel great about it, but I think that's how it'll go. And I'll say this about those other guys, like Hollister. I think he's probably a practice squad guy, but Mason Kinsey has gotten a lot better. He is good. And if Kyle Phillips weren't here, then I think Mason Kinsey would make the team. And I actually think Mason Kinsey has a chance to be scooped up by someone.
Maybe
if they put him on waivers Tuesday. I mean, it's, you know, the whole Mason Kinsey thing got out of control last year because he was having these great preseason games. He was like, oh, dominated Atlanta. And it's like, okay, calm down. And he was on the practice squad. But he actually has gotten, I think, quite a bit better since then. And he's like, I think he could help somebody. It's funny because, of course, this receiver room was not supposed to be anything special at all this year. But he just doesn't fit in it because Kyle Phillips is the slot guy and is better than him. I'm going to be very interested to see if somebody out there has been paying attention to the game film and paying attention in the joint practices, which a couple teams have seen him and has interest in Mason Kinsey. Maybe another former Titans receiver to be landing in Detroit.
Maybe. I mean, I'd take him on the Packers today.
Yeah, he could possibly help them.
A little 3rd and 7, well, Rodgers to Mason Kinsey. I'd take it today.
Yeah, I actually think he's helped himself. It's just that it just doesn't work here.
615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. We got more of your thoughts on the Titans to get to coming up next. We'll continue to look ahead at the roster cut decisions that John Robinson and Mike Vrabel have upcoming for them this week. That's next. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road here on 1025, 1063, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on 1025, 1063, The Game, streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by the Law Offices of Amanda Gentry. We are live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Taking your thoughts on the Titans on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Will from Nashville on the text line says, I think if Malik gets the number 2, that opens up another roster spot. Which position would likely be added to with that addition? So, Joe, we talked about this earlier. If Malik is the number 2 quarterback, that is, you know, we've all been operating under the assumption that they're going to carry 3 and wondering where that kind of sacrifice comes for them with a different roster spot on this team. If it is 2, like, are there any tough cuts that you think the Titans are looking at from a position standpoint where they'd like to keep a certain guy, but if they're keeping 3 quarterbacks, they probably wouldn't be able to do it. That opens up if there's only 2 quarterbacks that are going to be on the roster.
Yeah, like, so kind of O-line is usually 8 or 9. Do they really like one of those young guys, McKenzie or somebody, you know? And it's like, well, developmental guy, but, you know, keeping the 3rd quarterback. Or – we've talked about inside linebacker, a lot of different pretty good backups, I think, in the camp, like some good play. What do they think about Campbell, Jones, Joe Jones, and, you know, Dr. Gibbons? You know, safety, the same thing. You go around that D-line, and I think they've got, just like Mason Kinsey, I think, could be of interest. I think a couple of those D-linemen could be of interest to some teams out there who don't have the depth the Titans have, like a DeMarcus Walker. I think someone would pick him up. Deshaun Hand, possibly the same thing. I mean, it, you know, easily that could be the difference, one of those 2 guys making this team or not, you know, that QB decision. So those are the ones that come to mind for me. I mean, I guess I've kind of moved on from the idea of Trenton Cannon, making the team as a returner / running back. I don't, you know, he got banged up, and it's just, man, if you get an injury and you're in a situation like he was, that's tough to prove yourself. Yep. And availability is so huge. It sucks. It's unfair. But in this league, if you show any vulnerability in terms of getting banged up, that's much easier for a team to move on from you. So I don't think that'll be the spot, but it's probably somewhere in that defense.
So I want to throw the same question at you that you threw at Corey Curtis a little bit earlier on the show. The preseason is now done. They're going to make cuts this week, and then really from that point on, it's on to game planning for New York, and the regular season's right around the corner. Based on what you've seen, your expectations, your thought on this Titans team heading into the season, are they right around what you thought they'd be? Are they better? Are they worse? How do you view the Titans heading into now the, I guess, unofficial portion of the regular season beginning this week?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'd still stick with about a 10-7 team, 10-7 to 11-6 team. So, which means better than certainly like the NFL at large thinks of the Titans. I don't think they're a number one seed kind of team. The schedule's really tough. I think the cornerback situation was an encouraging development, and so was the receiver situation. I think both of those spots are better than, you know, than it certainly could have been going into camp. I think the offensive line, you could argue, is worse. I'd say it's at least as much a concern. The fact that the guy that you gave every opportunity to win the job has now been kind of relegated to backup. I don't think it'd be cut, but I, you know, he's a backup. He's a just another guy out there and give you some depth. So now you got a rookie at right tackle, and you have a starting left guard who won the position going away, and they love him in that building. But how good is he going to be against the top D tackles in this league? And it's just a big difference going from Roger Saffold to kind of an undersized guy, Aaron Brewer. I mean, he's a fascinating story, but that could also be problematic. So you factor that in. Like, again, we joke about it all the time. I'll say just very seriously, like, Ryan Tannehill's camp meant nothing to me. He was good. He looked good. He looked good last camp. He looks good in practice. He's always good in practice. And for the most part, he's been a good quarterback for the Titans. Much better quarterback his first two seasons than last year. I think he's ready to, like, have a good regular season, but then I can't even talk about that without getting right to what will those pockets look like. Do they have to have all this help to give him protection to throw? Because I think the play action game will be there. I think Derrick Henry's going to be there. As long as he's healthy, he's going to be really good. It's a good team. If that part of it gets answered, and also they are better at the OC spot, they are better with Tim Kelly coming in, with Todd Downing in the second year, and they're better at emphasizing what Tannehill does well and working with him, then it could be a very good team.
I feel better about the offensive skill than I thought I would heading into this season. And maybe this is what we've seen heading into this year. I think the preseason games, they've had some receivers make some big plays. But I feel better about that heading into the season. Look, I thought Chiga Conquo was really good in the preseason. So tight end, I feel way better about tight end heading into this year than I did last year. I still am pretty concerned about the offensive line. And, you know, Aaron Brewer, he won the job pretty early and easily into camp. Is that because Aaron Brewer is going to be a solid left guard for this team? Or is that because they simply just don't have a better option at left guard? That to me is a big concern. You know, Nicholas Petit-Frere is a similar situation, although, you know, I think it's a little bit more of a known commodity there in terms of we know why he won the job. He's a rookie. He may not be ready yet, but Dylan Raiden certainly wasn't ready, so that's just what it is on offensive line. Like, to me, you know, I want to say I feel significantly better about the offense than I thought I would heading into this season, but the offensive line is the one thing that's holding me back. Like, I am every bit as concerned, maybe even a little bit more concerned, about the offensive line today as I was when training camp began. And that, honestly, to me, is not a great feeling for this offense heading into this year.
Yeah, because go back to going into camp, I thought Jamarco Jones would be a factor and that there'd be a competition. And I think he's missed so much time. He's been banged up. And when he was out there, he looks like a Kendall Lamb-like pickup for John Robinson. Like, it's just not what he was billed to be. So, you know, if he's not any kind of factor, you have any kind of trust in him to start in a pinch, you look at the depth, too, with this team. I mean, like, Corey Levin, it's a guy who's bounced around. They cut him a couple years ago. He's back. I think he's going to make the team. And I think he's improved, but you could have a pretty decent drop-off. And you know that Ben Jones is going to be fighting through injury this year to play. And Nate Davis has missed a lot of camp. I mean, you could go through the whole thing, like, other than Taylor Lewan, and find a reason to freak out, you know, at each spot. And I'm just assuming Taylor Lewan is going to be peak Taylor Lewan or close to it. I don't know that for sure. I do think that that's one of the reasons for optimism is that he had a regular offseason. He's passed all the knee stuff, and he's still, I think has some good football left in him. But every other spot, you can find a reason to question it. Again, even Ben Jones, just because he's just, I mean, daily out there in practice, he just gets banged up so much. His toughness is unquestioned, his leadership unquestioned, the experience, the mental aspect of being the center for this team. But you may not get 17 games from that guy this year. It's something you have to be prepared for. And yeah, I'm with you. I think the offensive line probably has to be considered a negative from starting camp to now. And it's like Corey said earlier, this is a line of scrimmage game, always has been and always will be.
On the flip side of that, though, like I feel pretty good about the defense heading into the year. Now, there's one caveat to that. Like, I'm hoping as they start to get closer to the actual game against the Giants that you see Danico Autry get back out there, because it's still like they're going to need those four guys that we talk about all the time to generate pressure on the quarterback. So the more that he's not out there and available, the more concerned I am. But hopefully he's out and can be ready to go by the time the game rolls around against the Giants. But you know, I'm looking at this defense. Secondary was a big question. I feel okay about Caleb Farley. Roger McCreary, by the way, he didn't even play the other night, which I think gives you a pretty good indication of how Vrabel's viewing Roger McCreary right now. Like he said, you know what? I don't think you need this third preseason game. We'll just we'll see you against New York. That's a pretty good sign for the rookie cornerback out of Auburn.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I'm really interested to see, you know, how he does when the lights are on and it's you know, game time against good receivers in this league, game plan for your defense, where he is, how that's split up with him and Farley. I mean, look, keeping an open mind on McCreary. I think one way or the other, he's a key factor for this defense and looks like a really good pick. So, yeah, look, overall, I think the corner situation, Farley played the whole time, and I still think a lot more good than bad for Farley, and I think there's a lot there to work with. It could be really good. You know, Rashad Weaver is a guy who I think is going to be in some situations this year, make some plays, and of course that was not the case last year. So another really interesting situation there. You talk about extra spots with a QB. David Anane, yep, had a heck of a preseason. I mean, he had a heck of a preseason. You could even maybe argue, could he take Ola Adeniyi's spot? I don't think so. But I think both of them could make it, which would give you five outside linebackers. Boy, if you go that route, though, how do you keep three quarterbacks? You know, that's a really interesting one when you talk about the roster, because they paid him a little bit more as an undrafted free agent, and he did not disappoint at all.
He had a great preseason, and that's why with each passing day as I've thought about this, I think there's a good chance they're only keeping two quarterbacks. But we'll see what happens on that front. Coming up next, we'll get into Vanderbilt's big win against Hawaii over the weekend, a statement from Clark Lee and company. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. College football back this week. Week one coming up. The Vols taking on Ball State on Thursday. Lots of action coming up this weekend, but lots of action already taking place. Vanderbilt thrashing Hawaii over the weekend, 63-10, the final score. Over 400 yards rushing on the ground. Mike Wright, with about 150 through the air, a little bit over 160 on the ground as well. And Vanderbilt rolls in that game, even though, Joe, there was some, as Clark Lee pointed out, some adversity to begin the game. Hawaii marches right down the field on their opening drive of the game. They take a 7-0 lead. And then Anthony Orji returns a fumble for a touchdown in that game to make it 14-7. And really, from that point on, it was all Vanderbilt all the time in that game, and they dominate 63-10. You know, obviously that's an eye-popping score, Joe. I think Vanderbilt looked really impressive. I also think Hawaii's got a chance to be pretty bad. But I've said this a couple of times on the show today. Like, if you're a Vanderbilt fan, I hope he enjoyed the heck out of that game. Like, that has not happened very often for Vanderbilt. Wins in general, certainly wins like that as of late. And if you're a Vandy fan, I think you should be smiling pretty widely on this Monday morning.
Yeah, I mean, if you're a Vanderbilt fan who's downplaying this or, you know, discrediting this because Hawaii stinks, then I don't think that you've been paying close enough attention to what Vanderbilt football has been of late. It's first of all, I've never seen Vanderbilt football do anything like this at all to a Power Five team.
No.
It's been a long time since they've scored that many points in any sort of game. And yes, Hawaii's bad, but again, take Vanderbilt's football team last year, send them to Hawaii and that exact bad Hawaii team, and I'll take Hawaii and I'll take Hawaii and give you 10. I don't know what this means moving forward, but there are some things that I think will translate to future games. I like the creativity of the offense. I like what Joey Lynch has done around Mike Wright in terms of building an offense around him. I think you see the case for picking a quarterback and going with the quarterback. And by the way, I think it's pretty clear. AJ Swan got in the game late, basically played the whole fourth quarter. In fact, I think he got in the third quarter.
Yeah.
So Mike Wright didn't even need to play three quarters. It's pretty clear. I mean, AJ Swan's the backup, and Ken Seals is being a good teammate, and he's a guy with the headset over there cheering everybody on, and he's probably going to be playing somewhere else next year. And he gets his Vanderbilt degree this year in 3 years, and then he can go somewhere else and find a place to play. I mean, I think that's great for him, and I think, you know, next year when we have the Joe Milton Nico Iamilavia, oh my God, I just butchered his name. Over here, I think you may have a Mike Wright AJ Swan competition. But for now, I like a lot of what Mike Wright did. He is an absolute weapon running the ball. They've got good backs. The offensive line dominated, and you know there's gonna be some SEC defenses that will be a little bit more resistant than that. But I like that. I think I was more impressed with the defense. Bad first series. Don't know what you're gonna get exactly from Hawaii offensively. Got really beat up front, giving up big plays. I mean, 3 points the rest of the game and making plays, scoring 2 touchdowns. But beyond that, some pressure, some swarming and tackling. And I thought there was a lot to like, especially about the back seven on that defense.
Well, Maxwell Worship, I thought, was awesome in that game. Obviously, Orgy was very good. Defensively, they really kind of settled in as they went along there. Offensively, I mean – I guess the biggest question I have as you move away from that game is, well, what does it mean moving forward? Because Mike Wright, I mean, he did whatever he wanted to do in that game. 13 carries, 163 yards. Obviously, 87 of those yards came on one play. But, you know, he was getting 10, 12, 14 yards a pop every time he wanted to run. And it was even a couple times during the first part of the game where they had either third and short or fourth and short, and they tried to take some shots down the field. I was like, hey, man, just let him run the ball. They hadn't stopped him yet all day long. And eventually they did that and very rarely got in third and short anymore because they were just getting first downs left and right. But the running game as a whole for Vanderbilt was impressive. Now, the question is, as they move forward, how does that translate? Because the offensive line, we've talked about, could be a point of weakness for this team. They looked really good in game one. Will they look as good as they get into SEC play? And the other part of this that we brought up earlier, like Mike Wright is such a weapon offensively with his ability to run the ball. How comfortable are you if you're Clark Lee with him running the ball 13 times? Do you want him to run it more? Do you want him to run it less as you get into some of these games that really matter in SEC play? Like I'm really interested to see how they use Mike Wright running the ball as they move forward here because he's such a weapon, you also just don't want him to get hurt.
Yeah, and I don't know exactly, you know, I don't have the total breakdown of the other night, how many of his runs were pass plays where he takes off versus how many were designed run plays where, you know, of course they have some option stuff too. I look at that as there's going to be some games this year that are toss-up games. I think after what I will go ahead and jinx them and say they will beat Elon Saturday in their home opener. Yeah, the Wake Forest game, Wake Forest with Sam Hartman could be too much for Vanderbilt, but we don't know if he's going to play or not. I think that's a game you have to look at as a possibility. The game at Northern Illinois, defending MAC champ, lost some good players. I think you have to look at that as a possibility. There's about probably three SEC games that are, you know, realistic for them to win, to have a chance to win. In those games, I don't see how you win those games if he isn't a real presence running the ball. But you have to be careful. He has to be careful. There's times you got to slide, and, you know, you've got to be delicate with it. Now, I think in some of these other games, whether Vanderbilt's going to go every week preparing to win, and they're going to be talking about winning and beating Georgia, beating Florida, you know, but especially like Georgia, Alabama, those two games. I don't want Mike Wright getting hit in those games.
No.
It's not going to go well. And I understand that's not how you approach it as a coach. You certainly don't ever say that out loud to your team, but it's almost like a different game plan for games you think you can win and for games you don't think you can. And you work on other things when you're playing those teams, you know. And I know coaches don't do that, but those are the games where it's probably not going to go well. So don't put him in harm's way as much as you can help it.
I thought Ray Davis, Rocco Griffin, Chase Gillespie all ran the ball really well in this game. Like, Ray Davis, I think, has a chance to be a really good player for them this year. And I will say, like, Rocco Griffin in that game, he was physical, man. There was one run, I think he got down to, I want to say, like the 3 or 4, and he was just plowing dudes left and right. He was a load on Saturday night in that game. It was fun to watch them run the ball. Like, they said it a few different times on the broadcast of the, quote, confrontational attitude, end quote, that Clark Lee wanted his team to bring. If nothing else, they definitely brought that. And I think you brought up a great point earlier. They looked like a well-coached football team in that game. I mean, they looked like they knew exactly what they wanted to do, and they went out there and did it. Things didn't go well for them at first. I mean, not even just defensively, but the first couple of series offensively, they were all out of sorts. They had penalties left and right. They couldn't get anything going, and then they finally settled in and just took off from there. I just thought Clark Lee, if you had to draw it up, probably went about as well as it could go for Vanderbilt on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, it went as poorly as it could go. Actually, it went much worse than you ever thought would be possible a year ago in the opener. And actually, there was pretty dramatic improvement even within the season. But this goes back to, you know, after spring ball, I sat in with Clark Lee looking at, you know, he showed me this film of, like, I think practice was like 7 and 8 of spring of 21, practice is 7 and 8 of spring of 22. Indistinguishable, you know. Now, what does that mean? Well, I do think Saturday we saw a little bit of that's a real thing. I mean, it's a much better football team. There's a lot of guys now who are here who you have to be bought in at this point if you're still with the program from the time he took over. I've been told by some parents that, I mean, the difference in, like, expectation in terms of the workouts and just all that stuff went, it was a 180. And this happens a lot. Coaching tenures get, you know, they get old, they get stale. You have a little bit of erosion in terms of intensity. And Clark Lee came in and ratcheted it up. And the people who have hung around, they're expected to play at a higher level and be at a higher level daily. And there's still a huge talent gap, a lot of weeks coming up. But yeah, I thought that they looked like a well-coached football team. That's, as a Vanderbilt fan, that's, you know, of course you want to see wins, but you want to have that feeling coming away from a game. And I think last year, especially early, it was hard to have that feeling. They were just so bad.
It was. And now the question is, what can you do with it moving forward? I mean, we talked about this earlier. The win total for Vanderbilt heading into the season was 2.5. Well, you got one, you feel pretty good about your chances on Saturday against Elon. All of a sudden, you're at 2. And then you look down the stretch, you got Wake Forest coming up. You got Northern Illinois. You got a Missouri game that I think is very winnable in the SEC. Like, you know, we're going to find out exactly what this means. I said this earlier, like, a lot of people, I don't want to overreact to the first week because that happens a lot in college football. And, you know, Vanderbilt may not be as good as they looked on Saturday, and Hawaii may just be absolutely terrible. So I don't know what this translates to as they move forward here, but you got to feel, I think, as if you're a Vanderbilt football fan today, you're feeling better than you felt in a long time, would be my guess.
Yeah. Yeah. And you should, like you shouldn't, like, if you're doing, spending too much time downgrading Hawaii, like, again, understand like how bad things have been for you.
Yeah.
This was a step. So, and I think they're like, you know, we didn't see a ton from, say, Will Shepard, for example, in terms of playmaking. I still think he's going to be a very good receiver. We did see an incredible block by Will Shepard on a big run.
Oh, my gosh.
The receiver blocking, man, it's a beautiful thing in the game of football.
I swear, I went back and watched that block like 12 times.
Yeah, and that's the thing. That's winning football. You know, be a physical, ornery football team. And Clark Lee, go ahead. And that football operations guy, man, Clark Lee went ahead and leaned into that, apparently. So why not? Like, be a little bit nasty. And when you have a physical advantage, dominate the opponent. And they did.
We'll continue the conversation. 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. Kickoff week one with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. Join today to get started with $150 in free bets guaranteed when you place your first $5 bet. Just sign up with promo code ROB to get in on the action. Then you can turn game day into payday all season long. I'm looking at week one in the NFL. The Titans, 5.5-point favorites against the Giants. I like the Titans to cover in that game, but you take it any way you want to take it. Just make sure you do it on FanDuel Sportsbook. You can play your way and bet on more than just the final score. Wager on everything from touchdowns to total yards to catches. You can even combine your bets for a chance at a bigger payout with a same-game parlay. Don't fumble your chance to get $150 in free bets, win or lose, with promo code ROB. Make every moment more with FanDuel, official sportsbook partner of the NFL. Must be 21 or older and present in Tennessee. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable free bets that expires 14 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Got a gambling problem? Call the Tennessee Red Line at 1-800-889-9789. Welcome back in. Final segment of the day here on Robbie and Rexrow. 1025-1063 the game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexrow, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Big win for Vanderbilt over the weekend. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. Now, as good as it was for Clark Lee and Vanderbilt and company, it was not a great weekend for Scott Frost at Nebraska. They begin their season against Northwestern over in Ireland, and Northwestern wins 31-28 against Nebraska over the weekend. Now, I looked this game heading into the weekend on Saturday, Joe, and when I saw that the spread was Nebraska favored by an 11.5, I was like, good Lord, I'm jumping all over Northwestern in this one. It's the easiest money I think I've ever made in my entire life, but the seat was already warm for Scott Frost. It is now blazing hot for Scott Frost after the season-opening loss to Northwestern, and that is now 8 consecutive games that they've lost by a touchdown or less, which is pretty incredible when you think about it. But it's difficult for me to see this going any other way than Scott Frost getting fired at some point this year, because at some point there's just so much negativity around your program that it just takes over, and I feel like we're getting there with Nebraska football.
Yeah, no, some Nebraska fans weren't happy that he was, you know, back this year, and that's just a killer for them. It's incredible. Like, you actually, I mean, you got to feel a little bit for Nebraska, for him, the kids, the fans. I mean, like, that's an incredible run. 8 straight close games, and they've blown some of them in ridiculous ways, while at times looking like a very good football team. That's the thing. There were times last year, and I was like, well, pretty good. I mean, like, he's done some things to improve the football team, but they have no they just don't know how to close these games out. And at some point, you just have to look at that and say it's not an accident, right?
Yeah.
So that negativity builds and snowballs on him. On the other side, you know, I think it's fitting we talk about Northwestern football after a segment on Vanderbilt, because – first of all, shout out to Pat Fitzgerald for having the Guinness ready in the victorious locker room.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, come on, man. Pat Fitzgerald over in Dublin, you got to have a Guinness in the locker room and toast your team. But also, See, that's the thing about Northwestern. They've had a little dip here. They were bad last year. But they have a certain reliability and consistency under Fitzgerald that is why other Michigan and other teams have tried to hire him away, and why I think they're going to have a solid year this year. And that's a huge win for them. And that is what you hope happens with Clark Lee at Vanderbilt, is something very similar to Pat Fitzgerald at Northwestern, where in a lot of years, most years, you're going to be a bowl team. And here and there, you may have a special QB or just a special group of seniors and do more than that. And even if you have a bad down year, like you have this culture that bounces back. And that's exactly what Vanderbilt has to hope that Clark Lee becomes for them. Long way from that, but but Pat Fitzgerald is a good blueprint.
I think my favorite part of Saturday was Scott Frost in the post game throwing his offensive staff under the bus. I saw this quote from Dennis Dodd. He threw it out there. Quote, this is from Scott Frost. "I think our offensive staff has to learn you've got to be a little bit more creative in this league," end quote. First off, nothing says creative offensive football like the Big Ten, so shout out to the Big Ten. But it was an interesting strategy immediately early on from Scott Frost. They're like, "An offensive staff, they better get with it. A little bit more creativity needed."
Well, and it's such a coach under fire quote, because the immediate answer is, well, were you not privy to the game planning at all? Like, do you?
You had no say whatsoever.
Yeah, you just show up to the game. You're like, oh my gosh, guys, let's run some more creativity.
You just ran a toss sweep on 3rd and 10. My goodness, I mean, you could argue that's pretty creative in today's game.
I mean, maybe that was one of those. Yeah, maybe that was one of those, like, late in the game, some of the particular calls he didn't like. But also, as a head coach, don't you have veto power?
Yeah,
it's just, you know, that's a bad sign. The loss is worse, but like, when that's what comes out of your mouth as a head coach at the end of that game, that's just sounds like a guy who knows that heat is cranked up right now, in cranked up on the chair.
Gonna be interesting to see if he's able to keep that thing on the rails in Nebraska and how long. If so, not a great way to start the season if you're Scott Frost and company. They played North Dakota coming up this weekend, so I mean, I would assume they win that game. North Dakota, Georgia Southern, so this streak could be snapped. And then on September 17th, they've got Oklahoma staring them right in the face. So I'm sure that'll go well.
Oh, boy. Yeah. They're in the Big Ten West.
At least they're in the Big Ten West. That is for sure. So roster cuts coming over the next couple of days for the Titans, Joe. They have to be in by, I think, 3 o'clock tomorrow. So they're going to go down to 53 players. I'm interested to see what happens at quarterback. We've talked about that a lot. The punter battle, we've talked about that a lot as well. Are there any other positions of interest that you're looking at? Particularly, there's one that stands out to me, safety. Like, who ends up making the team at safety? What do they do beyond Kevin Byard and Imani Hooker there? And what does the depth of that position look like heading into the season? They've tried a whole lot of different things so far in training camp, and I'm interested to see what combo they come up with that they feel good about sticking.
Yeah, I mean, really, you go through every defensive position, and it's like, how deep do they want to go? We just talked earlier, are they going to keep 5 outside linebackers? I mean, you could make the case that the quality, I think, is there to make that case. But my gosh, that's a lot. Especially for a coach in Vrabel who most Sundays has been going with 3. I think he's going to go with 4 outside linebackers on Sundays this year. But can you sneak David Anunay on the practice squad? I don't know. A.J. Moore, to me, is the third safety. He's been hurt. He's not on IR. I think it's him and Theo Jackson, and that may be it at safety, but they've obviously tried a lot of different guys, and they've demonstrated concern for the depth there. Inside linebacker, and I think they'd love to – Monty Rice on PUP, so that's first 4 games. And in theory, he's the fourth or the third linebacker, but right now, Joe Jones has been making plays. I think Chance Campbell's a nice-looking young rookie, and Dr. Gibbons out there makes plays, and they obviously like him. So there's a lot of interesting questions at the bottom of the roster on some of those defensive spots. I mean, even corner right now. And, you know, the guy they just picked up, Ugo, I mean, did he show enough in a short period of time? And they just, you know, they swapped a 6 and a 7 to get him. So I would say that's probably a pretty good bet that he makes the team, but I don't know that for sure.
Joe, are we looking at Dylan Radins' final 48 hours here as a Titan?
I don't think so. You know, if you believe that, and it, like I said, I got the hat ready to tip to Stillman if this happens, okay? But if you believe that, then you must think that all these reps he got at one's right tackle was purely like, we have to give him the reps. He was a second-round pick. Regardless of what he is as a player, we just have to give him the reps. And I don't think that's true. I don't think there's a huge gap between Radins and Petit Frere right now. And if you're the Titans, you hope the gap widens as Petit Frere gets better and better as a rookie. But, I mean, it was close. And I still think Radins is one of the top eight linemen on the team. As you pointed out earlier in the show, Robbie, it's if you were watching these preseason games, they struggled a bit once they got deep down the depth chart at offensive line.
Joe, some very quick breaking news as our show ends, which typically happens when our show ends. This coming from Adam Schefter. Quote, the Titans informed longtime punter Brett Kern that they are releasing him. Kern has punted for the Titans since 2009. Ryan Stonehouse from Colorado State looks as if he's won the job. So some news there from Schefter. It looks like the Brett Kern era and as a Tennessee Titan is now over.
Please disregard all the words I put into on this show making the case for Brett Kern. Sad day for Brett Kern. Been a hell of a player for the Titans, but I get it.
Yeah, really interesting decision there. Looks like Ryan Stonehouse has won the punting job for the Titans. Chase, Willie, and D-May, so have you covered on all that coming up next. How does Derek Mason view the Titans' 53-man roster? They'll go position group by position group coming up on the show as well. That does it for us on Robbie and Rexro. We'll be back 6 a.m. tomorrow. Chase, Willie, and D-May up next. This is 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woohoo!
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.